Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
On this edition of On Beyond, UC San Diego engineering experts Jose Restrepo and Tara Hutchinson assessed the effects of Chile's Great Malo River earthquake of 2010. They met with UCSD TV's Rich Wargo to share what can be learned from this extraordinary event. Professor Restrepo, Jose, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and share with us. There are many things in common, in a way, with Chile and California in terms of construction and the experience of earthquakes, basically. What are some of those things that draw us to look for information from events like this?
Chile has been growing at a very fast rate for the past 20 years. They have done a lot of new developments, very heavily industrialized these days. So it puts us in an earthquake lab in Chile that actually has a lot of parallels to California.
What was the magnitude of the quake, and where does it rank again in the historical record of strong motion earthquakes?
Moment magnitude 8.8, and it ranks in the first five.
Can you give us an idea of how much more powerful this quake was, say, than the Northridge earthquake?
Let's say that we have the Northridge earthquake of 1994. The energy liberated could be equivalent to 660, 700 Hiroshima bombs, very large. And this earthquake in Chile, it's huge. It's a million bombs. It's huge, huge.
What was the duration of the earthquake?
The duration of the earthquake is of the order of 2 minutes.
2 minutes mm-hmm. of shaking like that.
Mm-hmm.
10 seconds, 20 seconds seems like an eternity when you're going through an earthquake. In 2 minutes, that's unimaginable.
It's endless. What is very interesting is what we call is the spectral displacements that we're observing in the earthquake. And this means that you have a building with a period of about 2 seconds, okay, back and forth. It takes 2 seconds. That building could have experienced plus or minus 5, 6, or even 7 feet from end to end, okay? These are very large values.
Give us an overview of the affected area and how that relates in size to California and how we might be able to relate to how big an area that was and how intense the shaking was.
We're talking about a strip of land which could be 110 kilometers, let's say 80 miles wide, by about 600 kilometers or 400 miles long. It's mainly, we start seeing strong shaking and damage in Los Angeles, and we can move all the way to San Luis Obispo, Monterrey, and end up in San Francisco.
So it's as if that strong shaking, the same strong shaking that was felt in Los Angeles would be felt in San Francisco.
Correct.
It's as if here we might experience a big quake in Los Angeles and people in San Francisco might feel a shake, but it's as if both places were hit.
Both places and everywhere in between.
Everything in between.
Yeah.
Now, you went specifically to assess structures because your specialty is a structural engineer and structures for dealing with seismic stresses. Briefly describe where you went in Chile to observe damage.
The city of Santiago, the capital. Also in Valparaíso and Viña del Mar, who are right at the top of the strong intensity motion. And all the way south to Concepción and up to about 100 kilometers south of Concepción in a little place called Cañete. So I inspected all those places.
Tell us about the context and the nature of buildings and construction and the building boom in Chile.
Chile has, in the past 20 years, has grown into a developed nation with a lot of tall buildings. And we are talking about 600 to 1,000 buildings that could be 15, 20, or even 30 stories high that were shaking in the, were in the very strong intensity shaking. The Chilean practice of building is associated with the American practice. So they use pretty much the same American codes that we use here. So it's a great experience for United States to go and see what happened in there, because those buildings are buildings that could have been built here with some differences.
So these are new buildings of new construction type, and a lot of them. So you get a good cross-section, almost like a good sample.
Very
good statistical sample of how buildings behave under this kind of shaping.
These are mainly reinforced concrete wall buildings, of the kind of buildings that we are beginning to build now in California for residential areas. So they don't have the beams and columns that we tend to have in the older buildings, but they do to have long walls, like, and they go all the way up. We know for a long time that these buildings can be pretty resilient, and they were. These buildings were had never been designed for these very huge demands, yet they took it.
So show us yes. An example.
So we see a lot of damage at the base of these walls. These walls are flexing, they are bending, mm-hmm. and obviously they develop large strains in the concrete and in the steel. So the earthquake came along, it moved the building to one side, the bars stretched, they came back, it basically ripped through the concrete because those bars could not stay put. They buckle and rip through the concrete. So mm-hmm. it's very notorious, it's very endemic, this kind of failure.
So this is the kind of failure you're seeing here,
yeah.
is the bars being pushed out of the
push
concrete.
Out and buckled and fracture. Actually, we see a lot of bars that have been fractured, which poses a challenge when you're going to repair these buildings. But what is remarkable is that in spite of that, they were okay. The buildings were okay. Everyone got out of the building, and many of these buildings can be repaired.
Do you have some other examples?
Yes, we also observed shear failure in buildings. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking with shear is this diagonal crack, and it's when you fracture one of your legs, okay, and your bone has a skew fracture. Mm-hmm. So you cannot support your own weight.
So what is this example, this building?
You see the diagonal crack here.
Yeah. Now, is this a panel wall that goes up the entire...
It goes the entire height of the building.
It's one contiguous mm-hmm. piece of
one contiguous piece of concrete. This is what we call a shear wall.
There's something very particular about this building. It's brand new.
Brand new. It had not been occupied.
It hadn't even been occupied. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there was, in a metropolitan area of 6 million people, only 8 people died. What was that example?
In Alto Rio in Concepcion. It's a multi-story building structure that did collapse. It's the only building that collapsed. Completely.
Is this a newer building, an older building?
It's a newer building. Mm-hmm. Probably it's occupied, but it's probably 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. And what was the failure there?
We have seen now from the records, very close to where this building is, that the demands were far, far from what the code stipulated. Mm-hmm. Probably twice, if not three times. Mm-hmm. So this building came down, but that doesn't explain why the buildings next door did not come down.
Though many of the buildings fared well, and on the face of it, modern engineering did much for life safety and saved a lot of lives in this phenomenal earthquake. Buildings are left uninhabitable, or they're left that they need to be. These imposes some challenges for reconstruction. Can you explain?
Very much so. Is what do you do with a building that is left with 1 degree of tilt, or has had a partial collapse in a densely developed area? So that building can come down in aftershock, mm-hmm. or if it's not inhabitable anymore because it's tilting, because you cannot push it back, you need to demolish it. And if it's in a precarious situation, how are you going to do that? It's a very important issue for us. How are we going to demolish it? And the problem is, too, is what happens to our neighbors? Not only the building has to be evacuated, but the neighbors have to evacuate themselves because they are exposed to this gigantic hazard of a building that can collapse on top of them. We see examples of that in Concepcion. You see a building here that has had a partial collapse, and it's in an area of downtown that is as dense as what we see here in San Diego, and it's a 30-story building, and we need to find a way to demolish it.
I understand that the airport was very severely damaged.
The airport experienced structural and non-structural damage. Some of the non-structural elements came down.
Walkways. Air conditioning, ducting, lighting.
Everything came down. The lifts to access the building had structural damage. This is a lifeline. This is very important to the country.
So you had some examples of industrial failures?
Industrial failures, in general, they behave fine, mm-hmm. with some punctual examples. The cement factory in Concepcion that had some damages in the chimneys, and the chimneys came down on top of other things, so you have a domino effect on the system. So when you need more cement to repair, you don't have the cement. The steel factory, when you need more reinforcing steel to repair, the furnace of the steel factory cracked, so it has to be fully replaced.
One of the devastating consequences, obviously, was tsunami. I know this isn't your area of focus, and there were tsunami experts, but what did you observe and see in this regard?
We flew from Viña del Mar all the way to Concepcion, and obviously you see the devastating effect of the tsunami.
What is this image here?
This is very close to Constitucion, which is more or less close to the epicentral region. And you can see here the actual coast, and you can see the area where the water penetrated, probably 1 or 2 miles inside. This is very flat. And whatever house you had here or there is gone. Everything is gone. And you see again the same effect here, but now in Constitucion, you see a lot of dwellings here that have disappeared, a lot of dwellings that have disappeared completely.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of ports and harbors?
In ports and harbors, we have very good results, with some exceptions. They did very well. But where the main problem was in the Navy post, in Talcahuano, where there they had the submarines, and they could not do anything. So the submarines were actually uplifted completely from the port.
And they were left high and dry on dry land?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm. Well, there is no way we can take any pictures. It was completely closed to.
So despite the tragedy, the human loss, and the immense amount of damage and the impact this is going to make on, this has made on the Chilean economy, the kind of the silver lining is that modern engineering, that the progressive engineering and the research that has been going on in the last decade or so, has made a significant impact. I mean, if you compare the kind of progressive engineering that's being done in Chile and here to older engineering, places like Haiti.
The lack of engineering in Haiti, they basically happened this year that we can have a very good comparison of two earthquakes with strong intensities, one a mega earthquake, the other one is a large earthquake, and one with devastating effects in the community, because basically at about 8%, 8 to 10% of the people die in Port-au-Prince. And that's very large. And in Chile, we're talking about 1%. It's very, very low. 500 people, and most of them die as a result of all the construction, the tsunami, and only 8 people die in water building. So it's something that we say, it could have been better in Chile, I wish, but it's tremendous. It's very good progress.
Could have been much, much worse. What implications will your assessments have on the future of design codes in Chile and elsewhere, including here?
I think we have learned that Chile can experience earthquakes that have low frequency content, and they are going to push those buildings way beyond what they have experienced in the past. This 8.8 managed to challenge the buildings, so now we need to work on the demands. Are those demands going to change? Yes or no? Is the detailing going to change? And the answer to that is obviously going to change. The detailing has to improve, because we cannot have these buildings damaging the buildings. Even though they responded okay, they could have done much better with a little incremental investment. So we are moving in that direction.
Now, you are a structural design expert and very familiar with California and how things are built here. Could you project, if that same kind of shaking, that same kind of event were to happen here in California, how we would have fared, from your knowledge of structures and the way things are built here?
In my opinion, is all those older structures pre-1970, they will fare not so well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them in San Francisco, a lot of them in Los Angeles that have not been retrofitted yet. For modern buildings, we will experience quite a bit of damage as well in the non-structural elements. Our codes have been tightened lately, but we have a lot of building stocks that have partitions and have very loose overhanging air conditioning units, piping that can come down and interact one another. And it's very important for us to look into this. I think it's important to learn from the Chilean experience to see how we can influence the codes here. We need to see if what we are trying to do with our code, particularly with the concrete code, is what we want as a society as a whole. And it may be that when we have a strong shaking in California, we may see some needs to improve, because we have seen some of them already in Chile.
Well, thank you very much for taking your time. And you're extraordinarily busy, especially with assessing the number of earthquakes that have been occurring recently and your many demands on your expertise. So we appreciate it very
thank
much.
Thank you, Rich. Mm-hmm.
So, thanks.
Tara Hutchinson specializes in geotechnical issues in structural engineering and went to Chile as a member of a unique group called the Geoengineering Extreme Events Reconnaissance, or GEAR team, sponsored by the National Science Foundation. She shared some of her principal findings about ground effects of the Great Mala Quake.
So Tara, thank you for being here and sharing this information with us. Now, you're a member of a very specialized team of engineers and scientists of different specialties. Can you describe what this team is and what its purpose is?
Sure. I was fortunate to be a member of a highly talented group of scientists and engineers within an organization called GEAR. It's funded by the National Science Foundation. The GEAR Association consists of academics and practitioners in areas closely related to studying the impacts of geotechnical failures and damage attributed by extreme events, as it sounds, earthquakes and hurricanes. The ultimate goal is really to turn disaster into knowledge, and every one of our colleagues on this group has this ingrained in their philosophical approach, I would say. The undertaking of this event was a close collaboration between GEAR researchers and Chilean colleagues. That was essential. That's very essential. In this event, the GEAR Association worked with the University of Chile, the Catholic University of Chile, and as well a local consulting, geotechnical consulting firm, Golder Associates, which has a home base in the United States and other countries.
How important was the international coordination and cooperation with your Chilean colleagues?
GEAR, its sponsoring organization, the National Science Foundation, the University of Chile, the Catholic University of Chile, and our colleagues from industry, Golder Associates, formed a critical team. Without any of these entities, this would have been substantially more difficult.
You talk about geotechnical effects and geotechnical failures
and
events. Can you explain what the variety of those are and what you're looking at?
Sure. Pervasively observed impacts in the past under strong earthquake shaking have been things such as liquefaction or lateral spreading. So any ground failure that impacts an infrastructure is something that the GEAR Association, for example, is very interested in understanding.
Now, in the case of the Chile event, GEAR went they have a certain protocol that's followed. Can you explain how the GEAR team goes in?
In this event, because of the wide impact zone, GEAR took a multi-phase approach. They sent a group immediately after the event to conduct aerial reconnaissance. The second wave focused on ground reconnaissance, now of more focused regions. Finally, a third wave now could make even further, more detailed surveys at sites. And these teams brought highly specialized geotechnical testing equipment and advanced laser scanning devices to get precise deformation maps of structures and such.
Over this wide area that was affected by the earthquake, where did you go?
The second wave of the GEAR effort landed in Santiago and distributed throughout the impact zone. We primarily traveled south of the epicentral area into a city called Concepcion and just south of Concepcion briefly. The majority of our time was spent in the city of Concepcion, which is the second largest city in Chile. And my role bridges the gap between structural and geotechnical engineering. So I was, trying to contribute to identifying the impacts of ground failure on infrastructure and how it manifests itself into structural damage.
What effects did you observe, and what types of infrastructure did you see the effects?
Geotechnical impacts on structures during this event, really manifested itself in terms of strong ground shaking as well as ground softening induced by liquefaction and lateral spreading. Our team looked at port infrastructure, transportation, and building infrastructure.
Can you give us an example of how ground failures or the effects you saw affected structures?
Ground failure renders a very unique situation to any modern or older structure. This is a hospital in the city of Quirihue. This modern hospital was opened to the community in 2008, so very recent construction. It suffered significant ground movement induced by liquefaction of the subsurface soil. You can see it's a 10-wing hospital. The designers of this hospital used a very modern idea of isolating each of the wings of the hospital, physically isolating them. Many of these wings rotated, shifted, and settled. under the softening of the ground and liquefaction.
What do you mean by rotate? They change in their orientation to each other. They move different ways in different axes.
They rotated about an axis. So several of these structures, in fact, rotated about its axis. Mm-hmm. So these buildings ranged in height from 1 to 6 stories, and the taller structures, of course, have a larger tendency to want to topple because their center of mass is higher. These are two different wings within the building. If you stand back and you look at the interface between the buildings, which previously had a gap, this movement manifests itself into an impact.
Basically, the two pieces of the building came together where they didn't used to be together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other types of damage you observe, particularly in this type of foundation system where you have a perimeter foundation and then a floating slab that's been placed on the ground, as the ground liquefies, you see heave, you see distortion of the foundation.
What is the prognosis for this hospital?
This hospital will be repaired. However, the ground can be improved and the buildings can be, in fact, moved back into their position, or potentially some of them, this amount of movement can be tolerated. The interior, and particularly the interior at the ground floor levels, will need substantial repair. However, the actual structural damage, was fairly insignificant for this hospital. So it's good news.
Transportation, what did you observe in terms of transportation?
Chile's transportation network must cross a broad range of terrain. Running north, south, it's a peninsula type of country. The result, from an infrastructure point of view, is roadways and bridges that must cross many rivers. A main route, for example, is Route 5.
Just like
our Interstate 5 and our Interstate 101, in fact. It's analogous to our 101 because it's slightly inland. If you drove from San Francisco to LA, you'd probably take 101, right? You'd take Route 5 in Chile, and you'd actually end up in Los Angeles as well because there is a city, Los Angeles, in Chile, ironically.
More in common with Chile than you think.
Right. Although roads on this primary corridor were impacted by local ground failure and sloughing of the ground and poor compaction issues, the more pervasive issue really was related to bridges. This is the Biobío River. This is sometimes called Puente Nuevo, the new bridge, because it's the newest of those that you see here. Actually, it's the longest span bridge in Chile. The reason this case history is quite interesting relative to the others is that the ground failure manifested itself into a number of different structural issues, and perhaps all of the types of ground failure that were observed individually in other bridges were collectively observed in this bridge, unfortunately. When you have this type of liquefaction, you see one of our Chilean students here standing in a sand boil. It's quite impressive volume of material that's moved. You can imagine what's occurring to the ground. The river's edge area, we observed a classical spreading of the ground towards the river. These large deformations can manifest themselves into structural failures. Loss of support of the foundation, propagates to the superstructure into things like deck settlement. And so this bridge was completely closed.
So you saw all of what could happen to a bridge in some kind of geotechnical failure happen to this bridge.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, all this damage occurs in the span of the shaking. How long was this earthquake? A couple of minutes or so?
Liquefaction can occur very early in the shaking. However, some of the phenomena, such as lateral spreading, may occur over a longer period of time. Lateral spreading is really the movement of the ground downslope after liquefaction,
like
or some type of, kind of like a landslide, right? It can manifest itself into a slower phenomena.
What other kinds of economic infrastructure? You said you looked at, you visited and assessed ports, and I understand Chile has a heavy reliance on its ports because you either have to take things out of the country by air, by sea, because it's hard to get things over the Andes.
Yeah.
You had an example of one port where a lot of economic activity is concentrated in one place, like many of the ports in Chile. Can you go over that with us?
Yeah, this is a St. Vicente port region, which is in the city of Concepcion. One of the primary industrial activities in the area actually happens to be related to fishing. Of course, as we said, it's near the coastal region, so it suffered significant liquefaction, ground softening, and lateral spreading. What this meant, of course, is that the docking of the boats was impacted immediately after the earthquake, and access of the fishing facilities was severely hampered. More importantly, however, fishermen, of course, bring their product in, and they need it to be packaged.
And one of the largest fish packaging facilities happens to be here. You can see a number of these buildings sliding towards the seashore, lifting up, tilting, and settling. And we were told that these buildings would be destroyed. And the fish industry in this area had come to a complete halt.
What is your hope, what is GEAR's hope for going there, doing reconnaissance and understanding the effects? And what is the process of incorporating this into our body of knowledge and how we deal with preparing for extreme events, be they seismic or be they some other geotechnical
event? It's a very important fundamental question you're asking, actually. You know, you can think of this earthquake as a 600 by 100 kilometer shake table, impacting such a large area of a broad range of type of structures, buildings that have been constructed to no building code up until, you know, modern building codes today. The importance of collecting this information, documenting it, and going back and reanalyzing these case histories is really at the forefront of the objective. Because in that sense, if you're able to reanalyze these case histories and understand how well they perform, you can relate them to existing infrastructure, be it here in the United States or other countries that are on the likelihood of suffering significant seismic movement in the future. So really, one of the models of the association, the group of colleagues that I was fortunate to work with, is this idea of turning disaster into knowledge. And that is the hope. I think that is the hope of the GEAR Association and many of the other reconnaissance teams that put their time and their energy into going to these sites and immediately reporting on the impact.
Well, I feel that we're very fortunate in having people like you and your team members and your colleagues and your associates going out and applying your best knowledge to problems and working on them so that we can improve the situation here and the situation around the world to reduce impacts and effects on people and their societies.
Yeah, in the end, the idea is to learn and design better buildings and infrastructure, better and safer buildings and infrastructure in the future.
Well, thanks very much for sharing this with us, as well as being on the GEAR team and applying your knowledge and your expertise there.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.